This episode and the entire season of episodes is proudly brought to you by California Cryobank. Use code QueerFam26 for a free level 3 subscription to their donor catalog. Make those babies, y'all, and then come tell me about them.
The Queer Family Podcast. Love is love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love.
There's no other parent like a LGBTQ plus parent, I feel like, because of that intentionality, for sure.
Agreed. And that's a soundbite right there. Welcome, 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 y'all, to the Queer Family Podcast, the show all about family, but with gay. I'm your gay host, Jamie, and this is the show that highlights, celebrates, uplifts, and normalizes LGBTQIA families in all of our fabulous identities. And this one is a fabulous one. It really is. And don't forget, you're getting an episode right now. It's a Thursday. Are you shocked? Don't forget, we're in our Pride extravaganza, which means that instead of one weekly episode of the Queer Family Podcast through the month of June, Pride Month, you get two weekly episodes. You get one on Monday and one like this one on Thursday. So you're welcome. More queer family goodness right in your podcast app. Let's go with the normalization and the representation. You know, one thing I think that queer families spend a surprising amount of time doing is navigating other people's assumptions. Am I right? Assumptions about who the real parent is. Assumptions about biology. Assumptions about marriage. Assumptions about sexuality. Assumptions about what our families are supposed to look like. And today's guests, Vanessa and Jory, really understand assumptions very well. Their story just challenges assumptions at every turn. They both grew up religious. One of them was previously married to a man. They built their family through known donor conception and later did reciprocal IVF, which people have assumptions about there too. And now they're raising three kids while also navigating the weird comments and assumptions strangers make about their family in public, including people assuming that Vanessa was her own son's nanny because he's a redheaded white kid and she's Mexican. Yeah, that happens a lot to them. Assumptions at every turn. This conversation really reminded me that queer families rarely fit neatly into the boxes society expects us to fit into. And honestly, that's part of what makes our families so intentional, so resilient, and so freaking beautiful. Can I get an amen? I hope you all enjoy this episode. And if you don't know Vanessa and Jory already from their popular social media account, Modern Family Next Door, you're going to want to follow them after this conversation. I really want you to hear it. Let's roll the tape. Helen, Beulah, it's Pride. Can you please roll this tape? Let's go. Let's go. Mm-mm.
Queer Family Podcast, love is love.
Hi, Vanessa and Jory.
Hello.
It is so nice to have you here. I've just been talking to you about the beautiful page you have on Instagram. I have been stalking you and stalking your page and how aesthetically pleasing all of it is. And plus the great content that you share on your page.
Wow, thank you. Yes, we work hard.
You do.
Try to.
And it comes through, and I absolutely love your page and what you're sharing and what you're doing for LGBTQIA families. And so I'm so excited to have you on the Pride extravaganza.
We are so excited to be here, especially because it is for Pride and it's right around the corner. It just snuck up on us, I feel like.
It did. And it comes every year. It sure does. And I feel like this year of all years is one that we really need to celebrate and like lift up because it's been a crazy, we've been having some crazy times over here in the United States.
Crazy.
It's a nice way to put it. Yeah.
I would use a different word, but yeah, it has been crazy. And I do believe that it's like even more so, like more important to celebrate, especially with our children. Like our kids are older. So we were talking about it a few days ago over dinner, like what it meant. Cause our son, like it's like ongoing conversations we've always had with them. But I feel like now, like he's about to be 10. So it's clicking more so, and he's understanding more. And so it was nice to go over that with them.
It's important, and I love that our kids are being raised with the awareness of how important it is and what it means. And they're being raised with the awareness of how to be an advocate. Mm-hmm. Not meaning that they have to be advocates, because they don't all have to turn out to be advocates. However, they're being raised with the awareness of how you can be an advocate and how you can stand up for those that need standing up for.
I love that.
So without further ado, it's time. We need to do your 30-second elevator pitch so the folks at home or in their cars or on their runs know who you are and why you're here talking to the Queer Fam Squad. On your mark, get set, go.
We are Vanessa and Jory. We are from Modern Family Next Door on all socials. Our account focuses on just visibility and interracial couples, since I'm Mexican and my wife is white. We have three kids, 8, 9, and 2. And we've been together for 16 years and we're just happy to be here. And I'm over my time. Okay.
That was amazing though. That was perfect.
Okay.
And I feel like you were trying to like add more at the end just to fill the time. So yeah. You're right on time. Good job.
Perfect.
Kudos to you, like a true professional.
Thank you.
So 16 years, you met in college.
We met in undergrad in calculus. She walked into the classroom, and I feel like I tell this story so much, so I'll just touch on the facts. She walked in, and I noticed her. And she walked in with her like longboard or skateboard. It was like a longboard and like a Red Bull can. And I was like, oh my gosh, she's so cute. And like, but it was just like nonchalant cuteness. Like she just, whatever. And she sat directly in front of me. We didn't get together right away. She was married. She was married before we met.
You were married to a man or a woman?
A man.
Yeah. Ah, the plot thickens. So,
yes.
So Jory, you walked in looking like a lesbian with your skateboard.
But she was not.
Giving off the vibe of the lesbianic vibe, the sapphic vibe. Mm-hmm. Yet you were married to a man. Okay.
Yes.
And Vanessa, were you living that gay life?
Oh, heck no, I was not. Well, not outwardly. I feel like I've always known I was gay ever since like as far back as I could remember, but I've never came out, but I did have like secret relationships with women.
Oh.
Throughout like my life, I guess. Or when she first walked into that classroom, I had just ended one. And at this point I had sworn off women and like just renounced them and was like, not because their drama or anything before anyone says anything, but I was just like done with being gay because I was just like, it's a sin. I don't want to do this. I don't want to be like this anymore. And then I kid you not, I made that whatever you want to call it. I had that conversation with God. Uh-huh. And then Jory walks in, like semester changes, and she's there. And I was like, I instantly noticed her, but.
You were smitten. You were kind of smitten, but you were fighting it because of shame and all the things that we all know very much about.
Yes.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, I know. It's so sad.
Yeah, yeah. But this is a very universal story, right? The notice happened, and then, but Jory, you are still married at the time and still living a straight life, I'm assuming. So what happened for you? Like, how did we get here? Wait, I feel like we have a long way to go to get to you two together.
I know. How much time do we have for this episode?
let's try to nutshell this. So how'd that go, Jory?
Yeah, so I got married like right when I turned 19 for the wrong reasons. And it wasn't the best relationship at all whatsoever. But my parents, when I did get married to a man, they're like kind of let out a sigh of relief, you know, like, oh, we thought you were going to be gay or whatever. And like, well, I always, I guess, had those tendencies. But yeah, I was married and
the relationship was not good at all. And I kind of threw myself into school and college and everything. And then we became friends. And then during that point, in my head, I felt like I had a good excuse to leave my now ex-husband because he had already cheated on me and told me about it about a year into our marriage. But I was, you know, a super good Christian and I'm like, well, we need to work it out. And we didn't really do much work to work it out or anything. Mm-hmm. And then I reached a point where I felt like I lost that opportunity or that window to leave him. But then, like I said, one night, just things came to a head and I left and we were still friends at that point. She kind of helped me through it. And then once the dust kind of settled with that, it was like, because we were like best friends, but then we're like, I think we want to be more than best friends. Uh-huh. But that was very hard for me to come to terms with because I was super religious and grew up thinking, you know, it was a sin and a horrible thing. So, yeah. And same with her. So it was a lot.
You both had that barrier to get through. And on top of other layers of stuff that, like...
I know.
To break down, right? Like,
yeah, I didn't want to get in a relationship with her initially, like, one, because I had renounced women. But secondly, I'm like, you just got divorced.
But like, the funny thing is we were so brainwashed. Like, we were going to church together and she got baptized. I brought her to church and all this stuff. Like, we were so much in denial.
Whoa, yeah.
I mean, no, I was not in denial. Oh, but I mean, you, yeah, for sure you were. But I just was like, you know, one, yes, she's cute. But two, maybe this is the person God put in my life to, like,
keep me on the straight and narrow.
Yes, exactly.
No pun intended.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, keep me, you know, like, he brought her in for, you know, and I don't know. We were just children, I feel like.
And I think you're right. He did bring you in for a reason. And it was to flip the script and get you both together.
Yeah, like, honestly, like, he knew what he was doing, whether you believe in God or the universe or whatever. I do believe things happen for a reason. And we are here now.
Jory came into your life at the exact right time and vice versa. So you realized you wanted to be more than just friends. And then what happened? How'd that go?
I don't know. I feel like it was just a roller coaster, the initial. Like, we realized we wanted to be more than friends, but we were not out yet. We were actually, we dated for like 4 years in the closet, living together, but, like, you know,
we only
as
had
roommates.
Like, maybe two friends that knew.
Yeah.
Oh my God. That's so hard.
No, it was, but then, yeah, it was hard. And then we finally got to the point where we were like, this is not feasible. What do? We either break up or we come out. And we chose the latter. We chose to come out. Mm-hmm. And we've been together ever since. I mean, we were together since before then.
Yeah. I mean, you were together since Jory walked into that chemistry class. Let's be real.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, I didn't want to.
Yeah.
She texted me a lot and I ignored her for a long time. I would not reply to her. I would not, because I knew myself, right?
Right.
I knew myself.
Because you knew you were attracted. To use a religious term, you knew you had same-sex attraction happening there.
Yes. Yes. I felt it. And I mean, I don't know that you did. You were so lost.
Yeah. I knew I just wanted to be friends with her.
Yeah. There's, you know, you knew something, right? So, okay, so you came out. I'm just imagining that since you both were so religious that your families are pretty religious and not, like, cool with the gay. So how did that go?
I was terrified of telling my family just because I grew up super religious. Like, we even had a family friend who, she was a lesbian and came to God, and now supposedly, even to this day, she's not anymore. But, like, just around that conversation around the dinner table, like, the way they're talking about it was just like, yeah, you are so gross. Like, thank goodness she's not a lesbian anymore.
Oh,
and I was just like, this was probably like a couple years before I met her, too. So, yeah, I was just terrified of it. And so I just wrote a letter to my dad. I emailed him. We do that a lot, just writing emails to each other for important things. But I couldn't like do it face to face, and I didn't feel like I needed to anyway. So he took it kind of hard, but in the end, he ended up still accepting us. I think he took it just in a different way, just because I had just gotten divorced and he felt like he should have been there to protect me, to, you know, maybe not approve of us getting married and kind of fight that a little bit more. And now mm-hmm. I'm coming out as a lesbian and he feels like maybe he's a failure again. You know, obviously now like he doesn't.
It was a reflection on the way he raised you or something. Yeah.
Right, now. He's come around. He's better. Same with my whole family. But there is a point where I found out from one of my sisters that my step-grandparents had gone to the house with their Bible and were basically telling my dad that he needs to disown me and stop talking to me if he wants me to eventually come back to Christ and start living, you know, a Christian life again. And my sister said he basically told him to F off and like he wasn't gonna stop talking to me. So when I heard that in the midst of everything, it just brought peace, you know, to me. Because I'm like, okay,
hopeful.
Like, it's difficult. And I know, but I know he still loves me, you know, like,
oh, go dad. Yes. Yeah.
That was probably the most difficult part for us. And then.
And that's just putting it lightly, like that's in a nutshell, but because it was the first couple of years really, really difficult for them. Like they didn't renounce us, but they also weren't like
they still came to our wedding.
Welcoming.
They left. Yeah. They left early. You know, my dad was like, I'm not going to walk you down the aisle. I didn't ask him to, but I was like, that's fine. And we didn't have that type of wedding anyways, but yeah, so it was really difficult. But now
that was so long ago, it feels like now since we have been together for so long, it was like, wow, I can't believe that.
It's weird to think it was ever that way, you know, now at all, you know.
Yeah. Well, that's great. And a lot of times grandchildren help bring them around too, which I'm sure we'll kind of get into. Like these stories, like everybody's got one, right? And some go easily, some don't. But what about you, Vanessa? How'd yours go?
Mine wasn't as traumatic.
This was a lot easier.
You know, in the grand scheme of it all, like, yes, we were raised religious. I was raised Catholic and, you know, my parents are still very much Catholic. My whole family is. It was always just something that, you know, was not talked about or accepted. And I just didn't know any other like queer families around us. So I just didn't know it was a thing, but I had built it up in my head that it was never going to be okay. And I was not going to be accepted.
Right.
But when we finally came around to telling our family, I knew that if I got my mom on board, everything else would go smoothly because we are like a very matriarchy. That word, family. Yeah. So whatever she says goes. So I came out to my siblings first because I knew if I also had them in my corner, in my head, I'm like, if I lose my parents, that's okay because then at least I'll have my siblings. Like I couldn't lose both. So I came out to my siblings first and they were like, we knew, girlfriend, like you were not good at hiding it. And I was like, okay, cool. What a relief, you know? And so it was just amazing. And everything just continued as normal. And then I want to say a few weeks later, I prepped my siblings saying like, hey, I'm going to come home from, you know, because at this point I was already living away. And today's going to be the day that I tell like my mom, our mom. And so everyone came over. They were ready to like defend me and like everything. Oh. And we were drinking because I needed to drink. I needed to just get one liquid courage, but two just to like calm my brain. I told my mom and she did immediately start crying. And the series of questions were like, but why? You're like such a girl and you're so pretty. And oh, but you've dated boys before. And what about my grandchildren? And like she's sobbing. And the way I cope with things is by laughing. And so I started laughing and I'm like, Mom, like, you can still have kids even though you're gay, and you're allowed to look pretty and be gay. And I think because in her head, she just assumed like, yeah. Oh, you're going to look in order
you're
to
gonna
be gay.
Change. You have,
yeah.
You're going to like start wearing cargo pants and cut your hair short.
Yes. Yeah.
We come in all shapes and sizes.
Exactly. But to her, in her world, she never knew a world like that. Anytime. Yeah. Like, you know, we're Mexican. In Mexico, she had encountered gay people. The men were either, like, super flamboyant, which is also, mm-hmm. like, a stereotype. Yeah. And the women were, like, trying to look like boys. And mm-hmm. nothing wrong with that, but also a stereotype that, like, mm-hmm. she had just grown up with. And so I just didn't fit that in her head, but... yeah, we hugged it out and things were okay. And then
just for the listeners, out. We have a we have a toddler in the house who's going to make appearances.
I know. I'm surprised he stayed downstairs this long.
He was quiet for quite some time.
He was. He was good. I told my dad and he was okay. But the way I came out to my dad was, hey, I'm with Jory. And we're going to get married, because at this point we were like, we either break up or we come out and like, because we were ready to take that next step. Right. Like had talked about marriage and kids, but like we're having these conversations while still in the closet. So it was just like a stressful time. And so we literally came out and got married all within like 1 year.
Yeah, we came out and then a couple months later, like, oh, by the way, we're engaged.
Yeah.
It's all or nothing because you've been doing it. Like, that's what happens when it's closeted. Well, when we're out, now we're out. So,
yes,
you know.
Full force.
We'll be right back.
Queer Family Podcast, love is love.
Okay, y'all, now feels like a good time to talk about sperm, because we don't always have someone there that's going to offer us their sperm. Sometimes we have to go to a bank, and I have something really, really great for you. For nearly 50 years, y'all, California Cryobank has proudly helped thousands of LGBTQIA+ families fulfill their dreams of parenthood. They are the number one sperm bank in the U.S. They ship to all 50 states and over 40 countries, and they do have one of the largest and most diverse selection of sperm donors out there. I use them. I have many friends who use them, and I have many listeners who have used them, and I think we're all pretty happy with our little kids that we got. So to learn more and to start your search today, y'all, you're going to visit cryobank.com and use promo code QUEERFAM26. That's QUEERFAM26. And that's going to get you a free level 3 subscription to their donor catalog, which gives you so much information about these donors. So go ahead, go start looking around, start making those babies, y'all, and then come tell me about them.
Love is love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love.
Hi, Deani. Oh, my God. You are never going to believe what my wife said to me the other day. I cannot
wait. Jamie. Save it for the Patreon.
What? Oh, right. Oh, that's a good idea. Yeah. Okay. Listen, everyone at home, if you want to hear what my wife said, plus a lot of other things that I have been dying to get off my chest, and there are some things, y'all, there really are, you need to come join us on our Patreon.
Oh,
and
yeah.
It's me and my good friend Deani here, the amazing millennial who is young and sprightly, spilling all the tea in our queer little lives and exclusive contents that you literally cannot find anywhere else, literally nowhere else in the world.
The link is in the bio. Come be part of the queer family.
Love is love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love. Love is love.
Okay, so then families know, we get married, and then when does family building come into the picture? Like,
it actually came in, like I said, before we were married. We actually had tried to get pregnant twice before marriage.
What? Okay. Oh.
And it didn't work out, and then we're like, let's just get married instead. And
wait, we need to rewind. We have to rewind. You're saying it like, yeah, we were like straight, you know how straight couples will be like, yeah, we were just not, we're not trying.
Yeah. If it happens, it happens.
If it happens, it happens. So it sounds like you were doing that, but that doesn't really work with us. So can we go into this? How were we trying for a baby?
I'm going to just give you surface level. We had started to talk about building a family. We did not know anything about how to build a family. This is pre-social media for us. I actually was a strong advocate for no social media. And so, like, I wasn't on any platforms or nothing. And I only knew about it because of her. I was Googling and I eventually came across, like, one of the first ways that I found was home insemination. We did find some cryobanks, but in all of that, we have really good friends that we hung out with almost on a weekly basis. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as friends do, we catch up with one another and we were telling them how we wanted to have a baby, but, like, just the prices of everything and how, like, we just were so lost and clueless. And it was just a topic, a conversation. And then a few weeks down the line at our next get together, they were like, hey, we wanted to offer you our sperm.
That's great. Wow.
Yeah. And so that's how we were able to try twice before getting married, because we did have kind of like an unlimited amount.
You weren't paying for it. And, yeah. And this just, like, it was like placed in your lap. Like, hey, let us be your known donor. Like, wow. That's one of the easiest conversations I think I've spoken to somebody about.
Yeah.
Like, that's such a beautiful gift. Holy moly.
It's definitely amazing because the friend, she's like family to me, like a sister to me. And she, during that time, just had her first baby. And so we were just excited over the fact that our kids would technically be half siblings. And we're just so close that it was really, and still is, a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
It was a huge blessing, though, because that took out all of, you know, the in-between of, like, what sperm donor are we going to pick from, yeah, what bank, we have to go through a doctor, you know, all that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. You, like, got a syringe and figured it out at home.
Pretty much. No, I did watch a lot of YouTube, like, and it was a hyper fixation at the time, like, what to do and how to do it. And I don't believe, like, there were kits back then, like home insemination kits like we have now.
No, I mean, so, like, you're just bringing something up that is, like, really important. Like, this was what, like, maybe 10 years ago?
There
really was so much less out there for family building when you're a LGBTQIA couple. Like, there is a lot more now, like this podcast, there's books, but back then it really was like you do what the person you know did, because,
yes,
you know, you just, yeah, you're like, you're raw dogging it, you're just trying to figure out how to do it, you know.
Yeah. And that is exactly what I did. I found this lesbian couple on YouTube that, like, had done it successfully, and, you know, they showed everything that they used. Long story short, I worked in lab, so I had access to all these sterile supplies that this couple had mentioned on their YouTube video. And so we basically just did that, you know, at home, tried it twice, did Amazing. Not work.
Yeah. Okay.
And then we're like, this isn't working. Let's get married.
Pivot.
So, naturally.
So naturally. So you pivoted. You did, like, other straight couples out there, and you got married instead. And then you decided to not try some more by trying.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. So, because we did have a known donor, we did, like I said, had an unlimited supply of his supply.
That's amazing.
We didn't have a honeymoon. So, like, you were ovulating, like, a week later, and you're like, should we try? And so we did. We got married beginning of October. We tried almost, I wasn't even a week later, but we tried because we had him. And he'd come over and do his thing. And and because we had so much of it, we, like, inseminated, like, before ovulation, during ovulation, and, like, shortly after, just so that, like, we would not miss our...
It's the dream. It's like
just up the street from us.
I mean, it's perfect. Easy. It's like you really are, like, that non-queer couple just we're not not trying. Like, you really are. Like, that's yeah. as close as we can get to it, right?
Yes. And it was pretty amazing. By Halloween, you know, you had taken a pregnancy test, but yeah. it had, like, been negative. And so we were like, let's party. Let's, you know.
We went over to their house, and I was going to make a drink. And my friend, she's like, wait, why don't you take a pregnancy test? And I was like, I already did. It was negative. And she's like, no, you should probably just take another one. It could change. And I'm like, fine, whatever.
We knew nothing about pregnancy or hormones back then. So
I went to the bathroom, took the test, and it was positive. And it came out, like, all shaking and freaking out. I'm like, I am pregnant. I'm like, how'd you know? And it was just this crazy, fun.
What a connection. Like, and yeah. also that you were at their house when you found out. So it's like so connected. What a beautiful thing. That's amazing. Yeah. So you were pregnant and baby number one was on the way. And I want to ask before we get into baby number two, because I know there's two more.
Yeah.
Now that you're pregnant, like, what had been the conversation surrounding the known donor, his wife, the relationship? Did you draft up a contract? Did you get lawyers involved? Like, what was the extent of the conversation and all the things?
Yeah, we did do a contract, but it more not with lawyers involved or anything.
We just notarized it. Like, that's as fancy as we got.
But just outlining that we weren't going to come after them for financial assistance, that they weren't going to try to get custody of the kids later on down the line, like nothing like that. And I know a lot of people kind of do, I don't want to say this was like a business deal, but it was kind of like, you know, if you get into a business with a friend, they tell you to be careful because it could turn out bad and you never right. think it's going to turn out bad. But right. like, I knew in my heart that we didn't even need the contract because I've known this person since we were babies. We grew up together. Like, that would never happen. So we still just did the contract just for peace of mind for everybody.
I didn't know that. Like, she knew her from...
Mostly, though, for, yeah. like, for people that are like, did you get a contract done? I didn't want to have to deal with, you know, explaining, like, no, I didn't.
Right,
and then being like,
right.
oh, my... So yeah. literally just did it, so...
No, just, and it, so you also did it for me.
Well, you
because I did not know them like you did.
Right.
And
yeah.
it was relatively painless.
It until sounds like it. Yeah. Oh.
We had him. And then I feel like just emotions came into place because, you know, he was in our life and I had never been a parent and, you know, being classified as like, somehow I felt like the third wheel or like an outsider, right? Like she mm-hmm. had this connection with her best friend. Now she had this connection with her husband, the donor, our baby. And I had never experienced anything like this. So I definitely had feelings surrounding it.
Yeah.
That's, eventually.
Yeah, I mean, I'm so glad you're saying this because I know you're not the only one who has experienced these emotions. Kind of like I had emotions surrounding just being the non-bio mom when my wife gave birth to our first one. Like I had a lot of emotions that I had to work through over that. And then you have yours. And then there's the extra layer of you have this whole other side to the family now that is also connected and you have to find your place. Like you all have to find your place, but I can see how feeling like an outsider would come into it.
Yeah, it was hard. I will say I probably cried a lot, not just because I felt like an outsider, but it did take me a while to bond with our son.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if it was because like I was the, you I can't even more. Say, yeah, I was the working parent. She was the boob parent. Like Mama. He was just like more attached Mama. To her and Mama. Bonding just took longer. One, just because I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't,
right.
you know, like, and
yeah,
I felt
first time.
You know, babies could feel that. I feel yeah. like they're like, oh, your arms don't feel like my boob moms. And then we had an added layer to it. He was this little redheaded white little boy. And I'm this like brown Mexican woman. And I was called the nanny and babysitter more times than I, like, if I had a dollar for every time that happened, we would be rich. Like, that's how many times it happened. And not just that, like, oh, people asking for my rates at the park. And like, it was just this
crazy.
This crazy, yes, crazy time, because he was not able to speak and say, like, oh, this is my mom. When he was
crying and throwing a fit and people were looking at you weird, that, like,
I was abducting this, like, white little boy. I don't know. And obviously, these were, I don't know if that was what people were actually thinking, but.
Based on the comments you had gotten before.
Yes.
Then it's easy to assume that they're thinking that you have ill intentions with this little white baby. Right?
Yeah.
That's so crazy. Yeah. Wow. It's heavy. Lots of layers. Lots of layers to work through.
I know. So many layers.
Hi.
Can you say hi?
Can I say hi?
Hi.
I'm just going to be shy.
So you're working through all those emotions. When did a talk of baby number two come into play?
Right away.
Yeah.
Our son was probably like 6 months. We were we were of the mindset, like, let's just get it all over with and be done. And we're still young and we'll have the energy. I don't know what we were thinking. And we started trying at 6 months, but it didn't happen as easily as it did for my wife, for Jory.
And you were trying this time. You wanted to carry this
time. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
And I guess I should also say, like, part of our contract that we did have with our donor was that he wasn't just agreeing to donate for us once. It had to be twice because I also wanted to carry. And so that arrangement was worked into our contract, and we started trying at 6 months when Axel was 6 months, but it took me about 9 months to get pregnant. Like, it was not easy. And we were doing the exact same thing, trying three times.
Every ovulation.
Cycle. And it did not work. It took a while. And I did all the things. I, you know, started working out. I took all the supplements. I did acupuncture and massages and, like, all this stuff that people said to do when you're trying to get pregnant and can't.
I get it. I've been through it. And when you want that baby, you want that baby now. Every month is a struggle. I hear that.
It was.
Yeah. Good on the donor that he just kept. I'm calling him the donor. I know he's a good friend of yours, but that's so awesome.
We call him that too. We call him the donor too. We're not going to call him by his name really here.
Yeah.
Anywhere.
You finally did get pregnant.
Yes, I did. And it was a shit show of a situation. Not having to do anything with the donor, like, anything, but now roles were reversed. And I was the stay-at-home parent, and she became the working parent. And I was having to go to all my doctor's appointments alone. Our daughter was IUGR, which means inner uterine growth restriction or something like that. Means basically, like, that the baby was growing too small. And so I had, like, 3 to 4 appointments a week to get monitored. And I had to do that all by myself with a toddler.
Oh, God.
And, you know, with a layer of people asking, like, oh, who does he belong to?
Yeah.
And I'm pregnant and emotional and hormonal and I'm alone. And, you know, we lived away from family at this point, so we didn't have, like, any support system. And it was just a really shitty time for me. And it got to the point where they wanted to induce me because they're like, oh, your placenta is geriatric. And what was it? Do you want your baby to spend a few weeks in the ICU, or do you want to just go home empty handed because she died?
Oh,
like,
my God.
That's how intense my whole pregnancy was.
Wow.
And I finally did cave and let them induce me at 39 weeks. Because I could not take it. I could not take any of it. She was born and not IUGR. She was bigger than our son.
Bigger than Axel.
So all that for nothing.
All that for nothing.
Oh,
yeah,
my
all
God.
That stress, I feel like, was for nothing. And I mean, I'm thankful that she was healthy, but I just wish it hadn't gone down that way, because I feel like just speaking about it brings back memories. And obviously I'm still traumatized from it.
Yeah, I get it. And that's crazy. And that's uterine healthcare for you, right?
Yeah.
Oh, oops. Mm-hmm. Sorry. Like,
it's a big nothing.
It doesn't. Yeah, it's nothing. You're fine. You have a baby now. You're good. Go
take care of the baby. And, you know, you should be happy. At least we got monitored, you know, because then you hear the opposite side of like, I was neglected and ignored. And
there's no winning here. But you got your baby and now you have two babies who are very close in age.
Yeah, they're 17 months apart.
Oh, my God. And now you're stay-at-home momming.
Yeah. with two kids.
With one baby that you're the nanny of. And
one that is mine, but just barely. Because she looks like me, but she is a little bit more lighter complexion and more. I feel like all our kids kind of look like you.
Because you must look a little bit like the donor, Jory.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we're both white.
So maybe that's the similarity there.
Yeah, and you guys have like brown hair, almost the same color too, actually.
Well, and there's a lot to work through. Like in our families, there's so many layers that we have to process. And you had some extra layers there, Vanessa, that you had to work through personally and internally, and the assumptions that are made. Like, mm-hmm. Talk about assumptions, right? First, starting with your mother and her assumptions about what lesbians, you were supposed to go get a motorcycle right after you told her, right?
And then cut off my hair.
Right, and then the assumptions based on the color of your skin and the fact that you're the mom here, because you are also a non-bio mom, being the mom to this little white kid. It's a lot to process, 100%. And having to explain yourself all the time, it's exhausting. Yeah,
it was. And it was, I mean, something we all experience is like the having to come out regularly and it just never ends. And like, that was the case, me coming out. But like, oh, yeah, I'm his mom. And then when people finally understood that I was his mom, they're like, oh, where does he must get his red hair from his dad. And, you know, and then it was just like this other layer in it. And me saying like, oh, yeah, I didn't want to come out at, like the target line, you know. And so I
some
just.
Some random person.
Sometimes I did and other times I didn't.
Well, what I've noticed through the years is like before kids, I would like I could pick and choose who I decided I would actually like come out to, like when people made an assumption, like I'm not going to come out to the taxi driver, like when he asks me if I'm going to meet my husband at the sports bar, like I'm not going to, yeah, okay. Uh-huh. Yeah. He loves football. Let him have it. But like when the kids come into the picture, depending on what cognizance they're at, like I need to model pride. I can't not come out in certain moments.
Now that I'm thinking back to it, I do like what you said about like how you start doing that once the kid becomes like cognizant and has that like ability to acknowledge like, oh, hey, and like notice all these conversations. I never came out when they were little, but I have found that I do say my wife more often now, like now that they're older and I'm like, yeah, my wife and like his other mom or their other mom, just so that there is not. But I never noticed that like switch.
I think it just kind of happens organically for us because we don't want our kids to feel the shame that we have still so deep down inside of us. Like I have found that I have had to push through that shame, that fear. So much more because of my kids. Whereas before I'd be like, I'm going to hold on to that. I'm going to hold on to that shame and just let them make me feel like shameful about it. But not anymore. I have to like push through it so that they will grow up without the shame and stigma that is attached to homosexuality and same sex attraction. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
I don't know. Normalize it.
We do that. I mean, without noticing, like, I remember when we were younger and even when we had them, but they were, like, much younger, they were babies, we still wouldn't hold hands in public. Like, we still, like, people would make the assumption that we were probably just two moms like
hanging out
on a play date. Yeah, exactly. Instead of, you know, a family. But as the kids have aged and gotten older, like, one, we are more confident and comfortable in our who we are, that like we hold hands and we kiss and like we make it known that we are a couple and a family. And one, because to us, it's also like really important to model like healthy love, like not who you can be gay. You can choose like whoever you marry, gay, straight, whatever. But like, it's important for us to model like healthy love too and all that. And so, yeah, PDA is okay.
It is. And now you're all over your account kissing. I know, and we are.
And
I love it. It's great.
It's, yeah. If those Vanessa and Jory then would see us now,
yeah,
be like, right, oh, exactly. You didn't get the motorcycle, but you did get the social media account that you are all over.
We are. And again, I was so against social media. I hated that she was always on her phone. And I'm like, why are you on your phone again? You know, I was not attached to my phone whatsoever.
Well, now you get it. And we're lucky for it, because that's what we need. We need more normalization out there of families like ours and love like ours and how wholesome it actually is. Huh, yeah. Go figure. But we didn't talk about baby number three. And I feel like we need to, we can't, he's been a figure of this entire conversation. He's been a character. Was it same donor, friend?
No.
Oh, okay. Now we need to know. All right. Sorry. What happened here?
Yeah. It was, long story short, they said no when we asked if they would donate for us a third time.
Now years has passed.
6 years had passed.
6 years, yeah. Oh.
And we asked, and they didn't straight out, they didn't say no. They just said, let us think about it. Mm-hmm. They had just gone through a miscarriage.
Oh.
And I feel like that played a role in their decision making. And, you know, their trauma, whatever feelings and emotions they were going through as a couple and as a family. But we were in a stage where we were like, we almost didn't want to like keep waiting and then asking like, hey, are you guys going to do this for us? We ended up finding a donor through a cryobank for our third baby. And the way we made him special in our heads, because there was a long, long conversations about whether we wanted to do this. Because then he would not be genetically related to one of our children. Like, it was complicated. And for a long time, we were like, no. And then we'd say yes. And then we finally chose to say yes to him and to him existing.
Yeah, to him existing.
And we made him special by doing reciprocal IVF. So
there you go.
He was going to be, he is my genes, my genetics, my egg, but she carried him.
I mean, it's perfect. Best of both worlds. Best of both worlds. So then when you chose your donor, were you looking for characteristics that were more similar to you, Jory?
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, we wanted one that was more similar to me, just to kind of get a good, I don't know, blend of my futures and hers, you know, to kind of mimic if we were able to have a baby together, you know. That's what every lesbian couple or gay couple wishes for, I guess. But
I mean, if only.
I know. Wouldn't that be amazing?
I always say if you could make babies based on the quality of your sex, we would have so many babies out there in the world.
Exactly, right?
That's so true.
We'd have a soccer team, a couple by now.
I mean, there's very little faking it amongst the women who are in same-sex relationships. Let's be real. I know a lot of non-queer women out there fake it. We don't fake it. We're not faking it over here.
No. Yes, exactly.
You did reciprocal with a cryobank donor, and that's where he came from. And now he's two.
And now he is two.
Mm-hmm.
And he completed our family, honestly. Like, for a long time, I wanted four kids. There was a longing for me to have more children. And to me, in my head, it was always four. But as soon as we had him,
He's two in one, so it's like we have four.
That longing is long gone. I am done with children. He's the kid that made me say, okay, I think we're done. Because like originally that. we had bought a couple of sperm vials so that we could have give him a sibling that is, I don't know why genetics just, I don't know why, if it matters. I don't think it will eventually matter to them.
Right.
So that he could have a sibling.
It doesn't matter.
With the same donor.
Right.
But it does not matter.
No. And there's all kinds of bio / non-bio connections happening in your family anyway. So it all just kind of, you know, and what we learn when we build our families is love makes a family. Like that saying is really true. Like we are families through and through, and our connections are real, and we are the most intentional families out there. Let's be real. Look at all the thought you put into creating those three beautiful humans and all the thought you put into parenting these three beautiful humans and all the patience you put into.
Exactly. Yeah. There's no other parent like a LGBTQ plus parent, I feel like, because of that intentionality, for sure.
Agreed. And that's a soundbite right there. Hi, Arthur.
Can you see him?
No, I can't see him, but he has the headphone right now. Hi, Arthur. Hi.
Yeah, put it in.
Can you say hi?
Hello. Nice to meet you.
Can you say hi to the camera?
Hola.
Hola. Are we being shy?
I don't think he's ever worn headphones before.
No.
It's crazy. You hear my voice. I'm in your ears.
Why do you look like you're...
It is nap time.
I know, he's tired. Yeah, I know. I gotta let you guys go.
Queer Family Podcast.
A huge, huge thank you to our sponsor of this here episode, California Cryo Bank. Don't forget to use code QueerFam26 to get that free level 3 subscription to their donor catalog. Go make those babies, y'all, and then come tell me about them. Let's do this.
Love is love.
Whew. Well, folks, I hope you enjoyed that episode as much as I enjoyed it. And if you did enjoy it, feel free to listen to another or watch another. I have so many episodes for your listening or viewing pleasure. Just go pick one and enjoy. There's a lot. There really is. And also, if you really do like this show, please, I know I say it all the time, but please do consider supporting the show on Patreon. You're just going to go to patreon.com/thequeerfamilypodcast. You're going to pick a tier, you're going to join, and you're going to get that bonus content. And you're also going to get my love and adoration for the rest of my life. I love you all. Thanks for tuning in. Keep on tuning in, and I'll see you next time. Mwah.